This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Chinese troops and a wall of tanks advanced on protesters in Tiananmen Square on this day in 1989. By the next day, hundreds of people were dead and many more wounded. They were students, professors, and other civilians calling for government reform. Some were soldiers who'd been given permission to open fire on thousands of people who had occupied the square for more than a month. Since then, China has experienced rapid growth under a government the Communist Party still controls. So what does the incident at Tiananmen Square mean for China 25 years later? Here to help us answer that question is Scott Savitt, a reporter with the United Press International at the time. He was in Tiananmen Square on the day of the military crackdown. Welcome, Scott. Good to talk with you.
Thanks, Frank.
Also with us is journalist from Hong Kong, is Watson Meng. He is the editor of Boishun.com, a website based in Durham that reports on political developments and other news in China. Watson, welcome back. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Scott, tell us about the political climate. It's 1989. There are these demonstrations that have been going on for a while in Tiananmen Square, but give us the global picture in the communist world at the time.
Yeah. The Berlin Wall had not yet fallen, and, you know, now 1989 is considered a watershed year, but Beijing is where it started, and actually the East German head of state, Honecker, has said that the reason why a massacre didn't take place later in 1989 is because no one wanted to repeat another Tiananmen massacre. So a lot of Chinese that I know, they're it's cold comfort, but still comforted by the fact that at least their effort did bear fruit later in the fall of communism in Eastern Europe and ultimately the Soviet Union. But of course, it remains in place in China.
And tell us what was going on in China. What was this protest about?
Oh, I see. The Communist Party was attempting very difficult reforms. They were privatizing the economy, so prices were rising and people were losing their jobs. There were disagreements within the Communist Party about the direction of reform. So that was the state of affairs when the protests began.
And I think there was some confusion at the time and probably since that this was somehow a democratic revolution or a call for democracy. It wasn't quite that. That's not what was happening in China at the time.
Not so clearly. I mean, the leaders of China had been through the Cultural Revolution, and so young people in the streets just represented chaos to them, and that was a danger that had to be nipped in the bud. But I think you would have difficulty finding anyone who could tell you what democracy was.
Watson Meng, you were about 100 miles away at the from Beijing at the time of the massacre. Did you know what was happening, and what did you think of the protests in Tiananmen Square back then?
Yes. We listen and watch the TV closely. At that time, even the official newspaper at that time, you know, report the progress, what's going on there. I was a fresh graduate, so my mind still kind of, you know, as a student. So I knew what's going on there, and almost every day I know the progress.
Scott, tell us a little bit about the media presence at the time, because it's an unprecedented moment in the history of media when we're beginning to get live global broadcasts in real time, right?
Yeah, all brand new. We had the first cell phones, those big old Motorola phones, heavy as a brick, and CNN was brand new, and there was a Sino-Soviet summit set for May 1989 when Gorbachev and Deng Xiaoping were going to meet, the first time that a Soviet and a Chinese leader met since Mao met Stalin. So that was the reason for the perfect storm. The the entire world's media was focused, and all of a sudden Chinese students are occupying the center of the capital.
Now, remember, we'd already had some experience. The Berlin Wall hasn't fallen, but there's been significant change in Poland already, with the Solidarity Movement having achieved great success. So there's some sense in the rest of the world that maybe there are real cracks and real possibilities for change. And Scott, I want to talk to you about what that meant for reporters, particularly Western reporters like yourself, covering China at a time when, again, there's real anticipation that this might be the end of communism in China and the Soviet bloc. You had to tiptoe some ethical boundaries in trying to cover this story. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was very tricky. People ask me all the time and say, so how do you maintain your objectivity? I say, you know, I think it would be very difficult to cover that story and not be sympathetic to the students. And what objective reporting means to me is you attempt to get all sides. But in China, the government doesn't give you a side. You can't call anybody up and get a comment from a government spokesperson. You just say what the People's Daily wrote, and it's very unsympathetic. But you've got to try and stay as neutral as possible, and we, you know, made a point of doing that.
Watson Mung, I want to ask you a question, because you talked about the fact that this was being covered in the official Chinese media at the time. Your Boishan blog, of course, is now an important source of information inside China. You do it from here in Durham, and it's recognized worldwide. I wonder what you thought at the time about the fact that the Chinese media was giving this any attention at all. What were you thinking at the time about why they were calling attention to this at all?
Oh, in 1980s, actually, even, you know, Scott told me this, the political atmosphere there was more free than now. Also, the media control. So there is a progress. The official media originally, you know, is more on the official side. So after a while, you know, the student protests going on, and then, you know, they start to report, you know, I would say neutrally or favorable to students. This is up to June 4th. I think after the gunshot killing students, then, you know, all the media and the tight control again. After that, no more, you know, official news reflects what happened there. So that's
was there a sense that the students in some ways were playing into the hands of one or more factions within the Chinese government that was trying to gain the upper hand, that this was useful to some members of the Communist Party?
I believe, I agree. But there's only very few students, maybe, you know, some student leaders affected or influenced by one faction of the, you know, leaders. But I think that's not the key thing. The key thing is the social condition there and the people's mind. At that moment, the people want something different. That's the reason.
Did you have a sense, was there a single idea, or what were the visions for what China could be in that moment? What was your sense at the time?
We, at that time, we did not expect more. Even, you know, when the students, what they want. At the beginning, they only say, you know, anti-corruption. They very hold, how to say, they constrain what they say. They are very careful, not touch the political part. Only in late stage, you know, after the tension became very tight, they have no way to agree each other, and then the student became angry, and the more aggressive words came out from students, like asking for democracy, freedom. And after they shooting the people, you know, the students shout out like fascism, you know. totally criticize the Communist Party.
Well, as you said, this was an unprecedented moment of freedom of expression within China. The fact that there were thousands of demonstrators on Tiananmen Square shows a rare opening within Chinese society, both within and without. Again, a lot of media there expecting Gorbachev's visit. Live TV, continuous coverage from the scene is developing. We've got a clip from CBS newscast that day. Correspondent Richard Roth is narrating what he could see. He's got this brick cell phone that he's narrating into, and in fact, there was no visual. You could just hear a voiceover. He's briefly taken prisoner by Chinese authorities, and we should mention that this is fairly graphic and disturbing tape that we're going to broadcast right now. It's a rebroadcast of CBS from that day 25 years ago.
There are thousands of them, troops in extraordinary numbers. They're moving south to north along the western side of the square. They've got rifles on their shoulders. They're wearing helmets. They're in battle dress.
You hear that gunfire?
Fire, we do hear it.
Okay, we've got to get out of here. They're after Derek now. They're ripping away his camera. They're ripping away his camera, and they're coming for us. We're trying to move back and move away.
CBS correspondent Richard Roth reporting from Tiananmen Square 25 years ago when troops advanced on protesters. He and his crew survived. Hundreds of other people did not. Scott Savitt, you were there. You were riding a motorcycle astride a tank. Weren't you? Tell us what you were doing.
Because I had the motorcycle, you really couldn't get through the roadblocks in any other vehicle. And my girlfriend was U.S. Ambassador Winston Lord's wife's secretary, so they were able to tell me when they were monitoring Chinese military transmissions, and they were able to tell me when the order was given for both the troops to move and that they had permission to open fire. And so gave me instructions to be careful, but I rode out and came over a rise, and there was a line of hundreds of tanks and troops coming toward Tiananmen Square. And I basically just rode in the bicycle lane about 20 meters away. And I mean, if they turned their guns sideways, I was done for, but they were firing into the crowd in front of them because they were set on getting their orders were to clear Tiananmen Square before dawn. And so it's about 10 kilometers down the Avenue of Eternal Peace, and not a pleasant experience.
Did you expect them? I mean, you knew what the orders were by that time. Did you really expect them to carry them out?
I very few people expected what actually took place. Even the members of the military who I've been able to interview myself said that nobody expected what took place. What they didn't expect was the resistance on the part of Beijing residents. They felt protective of the students. The students were kind of shielded. They were in the square, but that's why the Tiananmen Square massacre is a little bit of a misnomer. It was a Beijing massacre. Most of the killing took place outside the actual square itself. And the people, they wouldn't move. They blocked the roads. They were disabling tanks with metal road dividers, running up and sticking them in the treads of tanks. And so the soldiers, you know, they're teenage kids from the countryside, and they were scared and they were angry. And ultimately, unless you were well-trained riot police with proper, you know, with rubber bullets and stun grenades, the only way through that crowd was shooting into it.
So there's heroic resistance on that day, but Watson, Hmong, today there is almost no evidence that that protest took place. You're a key player in the Chinese political scene today. What has changed since 1989?
You know, one change all people see, you know, is the growth rate of economy. Although the number is questionable, also the quality of the economy growth is questionable. But the biggest change for me, I think China, the political side, is not really moving in the right direction in many ways. Like if compared to 1980s, we used to have much more speech freedom or, you know, the media freedom. And also not so many people, you know, sentenced or arrested because they just have different opinions with the government. But now from, you know, 1989 to we have three leaders change. After each leader, we see the human rights situation is worsening. And just to compare one condition now, in 1989 or before that, is the government very rarely, you know, gave order to shoot people. 1989, yes, that's shoot people, killing, you know, hundreds, maybe a few thousand. Afterwards, you know, and so the shooting people is a very sensitive thing. Normally, the order will not be given, but now in this year, Chinese government authorized the local police, they can shoot people without a warning. Mm. So after this new law came out, or the order came out, a number of incidents already happened. The police just, you know, they should not kill the people. A number of incidents, you know, they just shoot people, kill the people.
So does that mean that Tiananmen Square essentially worked for the government? It was an act of terror. It sent the message that this will be met with force, and it was quite effective in subduing the population and allowing the government to go on business as usual. Would you say that's what happened, Watson?
The people were frightened, but that's not the key reason why China, you know, turned into the worst direction. I think it's the political system going to the wrong direction. Also, the corruption. And I think all Chinese agree, after the shooting in 1989, the corruption immediately became worse and worse very quickly up to today. So that's, you know, makes the country so difficult now. I think that's why they try to protect more people get angry and the government want to control the situation, then, you know, they have to put more people in the jail. If you see the political prisoners list, it's growing.
Well, I want to ask you, because I've only got about 30 seconds left, if you think that Tiananmen Square is still relevant today and still stands as a kind of an important benchmark to those people who still hold out a hope for political freedom.
Yeah, it is relevant. And we still damaged by that incident even today.
All right, Watson Hmong, thank you so much. The editor of Bosheng.com, a website based in Durham that reports on Chinese politics. Good to talk with you. And Scott Savitt, former UPR reporter, was in Tiananmen Square when the Chinese troops advanced on protesters and killed hundreds. Thank you so much, Scott.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you.
Just ahead on the state of things, we'll take a look at literacy with an unconventional approach. Stay with us.